This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking about access to education for formerly incarcerated Hoosiers, why it can be such a challenge, what options are out there to help, and what could make things better. We're joined now by four guests: Susan Hyatt, a professor in the Department of Anthropology at IUPUI, Christina Byers, program manager at PACE, Angela Phelps, peer recovery coach at PACE, and Zainab Cornelius, case manager and community organizer at Groundwork Indy. Welcome to all of you this afternoon. Susan, I'm going to start with you. If you can tell us about Inside Out and how you first learned about this program.
Thank you very much, Miriam. Yes, I've been involved in a program called the Inside Out Prison Exchange, which is actually a national and now an international program that brings college students together with incarcerated people and formerly incarcerated people. And we have all the students together in one class. Usually, if it's in prison, of course, the classes will be held at the prison and we bring the college students to the prison. And in other settings, we meet out in the community usually. This past fall, I taught an Inside Out class with PACE, which is a reentry organization. And that's how I met these other three people who are on the call. Angela and Zainab were students in the class. And the class, actually, the topic of the class was to look at barriers to higher education for formerly incarcerated people and to look at ways that we could address that. And the three of us, or the four of us, talked before we came on the air with you. And we just wanted to note that we feel very strongly about the kind of terminology that's used to refer to people who have had experience with our criminal justice system. So we always use vocabulary like justice involved or formerly incarcerated, but we never use other kinds of terminology for folks who have had that experience. And particularly in the classroom, when we're all together in the group with the campus students, we refer to the campus students and the community students. So we're very concerned about maintaining a kind of egalitarianism and how we talk about other people.
I'm glad you brought that up. You know, I have seen some of the terminology, especially when it comes to saying formerly incarcerated and stuff like that. So just to clarify, when we're talking about the program here, campus students, and then you have community students. So those are the two different groups.
Yes.
So the other thing I wanted to ask you, Susan, what did you need to do to bring the program to Indiana, and why was it important for you to bring the program here?
Well, I moved to Indiana from Philadelphia, from Temple University, where I had been a professor, and the Inside Out Prison Exchange program actually started at Temple University. And so I was aware of it from when it started in 1997. And right before I moved to Indiana at the end of 2004, Inside Out began offering began offering trainings for people from all over the country, and later it expanded to people from outside the U.S. who wanted to start Inside Out programs at their own universities. And I felt very strongly about it because I actually knew nothing about the criminal justice system at the time. It was not an area of study. I was very oblivious, really, to the impact that our criminal justice system has on, literally millions of people in our society. But I was interested in it because I'm very interested in and committed to community-based learning. And I saw it as an opportunity to teach in a community setting, which prisons are a kind of peculiar community setting, but they are a setting in which you have the opportunity to reach people who otherwise might not have easy access to post-secondary education or who might have had negative experiences with our educational system. So I really wanted to bring Inside Out to Indiana when I moved here. There was no program here at the time because I wanted to. I'm very passionate about bringing education to people who haven't had that opportunity.
Christina, what made you get involved with the Inside Out program?
Dr. Hyatt, she approached me. We were familiar with each other, worked on other projects in the past, and knew that I was working with people at PACE. I am a program manager, but I also work directly with one-on-one with people who are at various stages of reentry. So identifying the need to have access to this education, how important it is, the impact it can have on people's lives and the lives of their families and children. So we started working together on how can we make that happen here, starting just with the people that we're working with now and people that we've worked with in the past, and getting them ready and supported so that they're able to attend class and engage each week.
Angela, tell us, how did you end up working with Inside Out?
Working here at PACE, it was offered to those of us that are employed here at PACE and also have criminal justice backgrounds. So I, of course, jumped on the opportunity because, for one, I value education. And anytime I'm able to sit in a classroom, I feel at home, and that's where I want to be. And for two, I'm seriously thinking about getting my master's degree, and I just wanted to sharpen up my writing skills and my APA, which I think I made sure I let Dr. Hyatt know that a couple of times. So, that's how I got involved.
And Zainab, what about you? Can you take us back to when you first learned about this class and why you decided to be a part of it?
Yes, I learned about this class from Christina, who was previously my case manager through PACE, which I've been a part of for the past 2.5 years. And Christina told me about the class, and I was instantly like, yes, I want to do it. And it was like my first, I guess, like experience part of college. And it was amazing for me.
I think it's remarkable to have a program like this. I'm just thinking, you know, usually when you think of folks who are incarcerated, maximum they'll say is like, you can get your GED. There's no room for growth or opportunity. And this seems like it would set folks up for better opportunities when they re-enter. Is that something you found, Susan?
It is. And that's how I discovered that Indiana University and its various branch campuses like IUPUI is not the most hospitable institution for people to try to approach once they are released from prison. I taught an Inside Out class at Duval Men's Residence, which is a work release facility for men. And one of the guys in the class was just such an outstanding student. And as I got to know him, one of the community students, so one of the residents from Duval, and as I got to know him, I discovered that he had had a scholarship to Northeastern University in Boston and had almost finished his bachelor's degree in sociology when things went awry for him. And I would just say that in Inside Out, we never ask people any questions about their background, what their crime was, how they ended up in prison. We never ask that. I take people as I find them and work with them. As they want to grow and develop, as Angela and Zainab indicated. So Patrick was such an outstanding student. I asked him if he was interested in coming back to school, and he said that he was. So I brought him over to the admissions office here at IUPUI, and we sat down with an admissions counselor, and I was absolutely stunned when she said, well, he's still in a work release, and then he's going to be on a form of community corrections for a year or two. And so he has to be completely beyond any kind of supervision from the Department of Corrections before he can apply to come to school here. So that would be about 4 years. So, I mean, the look on Patrick's and my faces must have just been really quite something, because I was flabbergasted. I thought, somebody who's such a good student, who's motivated to come back to school, who wants to change his life, like, what is there to not love about that and to want to welcome back to school a person like that? So that started me on quite a campaign to try to change some of the policies at IUPUI. And we did actually change that policy. So that policy actually got changed, where if people are in a position where they can come to school, if they're on work release or community corrections, now they can. But here's the next obstacle, is that the application, the IU application, asks very, I think, intimidating. I mean, we can have Zainab and Angela comment on it because they're familiar with it. But the form asks you to disclose any kind of criminal history and then asks a series of very intrusive questions. And in some cases, people have even been asked to supply documentation that they don't necessarily have or know where to get. We're talking about sometimes people who were incarcerated for 20 or 30 years. Records from 20 or 30 years ago aren't necessarily digitized. People don't know even where to find some of the documents they were being asked to produce. So it's a huge barrier. And of course, it's very discouraging for people to have to constantly be repeating, you know, the worst thing that's ever happened to them, to have to, you know, we're all believers that, you know, people have done their time, they're ready to move on, let's let them move on and not constantly ask them to relive these experiences. So that's been, my next issue that we've all been working on is trying to get that form changed so that people do not have to disclose their criminal history in applying to school.
Before we take a quick break, I want to ask you, Christina, what would you say is the value in bringing campus-based students together with community students?
The value, well, it's dual. It adds value for the student. We refer to them as campus student or the community students. So for students who are formerly incarcerated or involved in the justice system, it brings awareness to them. It also allows them a way to engage. It adds value or provides value and purpose to their experience. So we're saying, hey, what you've gone through, what you've lived through, and what you're coming out of is important. And we want you to bring that to the table. You don't need to hide it. We actually want to learn from you, right? Your experience matters. We feel you should be part of the solution. So let's work together. It helps campus students or the more traditional student or the students who may or may not have had system involvement, right? It helps them understand all of the barriers that people are facing every day. And it's often just comes out in normal conversation. Someone's talked about their morning, what it took for them to actually just get to class, how many appointments they maybe had to reschedule, how they're trying to work one or two, three jobs in order to support themselves and pay all of the different fees they have to pay, especially when they're on supervision. There's lots of hurdles. And so even just being able to be in the same space and get to know people, and it changed your view of what somebody who's been involved in the justice system looks like and sounds like. Most what we found was interesting. We're all on Zoom, and really, you couldn't tell who was a campus student and who was a community student. You wouldn't know. That is real life, right? So it breaks down stereotypes, and it helps people really be able to learn from each other.
Well, we'll be back after a quick break. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking with a group of guests about education access for formerly incarcerated people in Indiana and efforts to remove the barriers that often make it a complicated, difficult process. We're joined again by four guests, Susan Hyatt, a professor in the Department of Anthropology at IUPUI, Christina Byers, a program manager at PACE, Angela Phelps, a peer recovery coach at PACE, and Zainab Cornelius, a case manager and community organizer at Groundwork Indy. Angela, how unique is this program in Indiana? Are there other ones like it? Do you know if this is a unique situation?
We are the only reentry organization in Indiana. We've been around for 62 years, which kind of has helped us really cement a lot of relationships and partnerships with many, many other organizations and people, which helps us really help people transition back home when they come back.
Zainab, what are some of the most significant things you've learned from your experience with the class that you took?
I think it was the values for me, just understanding, just willing to explore. And like Christina was saying, you know, just meeting different individuals from different backgrounds and different country and, you know, just being in a biased world to understand everyone. And we all go through something, and just being able to see, like Christina said, some you couldn't tell was community students or who was campus students. And everybody just was able to evolve in the class. And I've gained a lot. I gained a lot of value knowledge, wisdom, growth, strength. It's just like those are just a few key points of just how important Inside Out class was for me. And I'm continuing to carry that training that I had for the semester with IUPUI, and it has gotten me doors open left to right.
Christina, can you tell us a little bit more about what PACE does and the kind of work you personally focus on there?
PACE, as Angela had pointed out, we're a reentry organization. And what that means is we work with people that are reentering, and that can mean a lot of different things. It could be someone is coming out of incarceration. Maybe they've been incarcerated for a few years. We work with people who have been incarcerated over 30 years, and some people who fortunately only spent a day in jail, but they're still involved in the justice system, because what happens is once you have a criminal conviction, it follows you. It follows you way beyond the time that you were given on your sentence. So it's kind of a lifelong sentence. So we work with people to reintegrate. We work with employment. We get people ready for the workforce. We provide financial coaching and counseling. We also work on housing advocacy and advocacy in general. So we work to kind of behind the scenes with different community partners, highlighting the issues that people are facing every day. And then we also work with people like Zainab, who she is a great example of someone who is really, really working hard to better her life and that of her children, and then also be able to use her lived experience for bettering the lives of others through advocacy. And Inside Out is one way she started getting more and more involved, and I've seen her confidence just multiply. And it's been huge, as she pointed out, it's been huge in her own life. So seeing her blossom, that's really all the proof that you need.
Angela, what about your work with PACE? Are you mostly working individually with people to help with issues around reentry? Can you sort of take us through your day-to-day?
Well, I'm a peer recovery co-chair at PACE, but I also do case management. So basically what my day-to-day is, I work with different people from different walks of life who are coming back home or have been home, who are in need of services that they need help with. So sometimes it's employment. Sometimes it's to help find places that might not be as restrictive on renting to them because they have a background. Which happens to be a huge issue right now. That's part of the case management side. But then I also, in the recovery aspect, I do a lot of goal setting, helping people. Because one thing I have found is when you meet people where they're at and you just start knocking some of these little bitty goals off, and it could be just as simple as applying for SNAP benefits and then receiving those SNAP benefits, getting just those little bitty things accomplished starts building that confidence and helping them get that stability and that foundation back to where they can start building bigger dreams on that.
You know, as you're explaining the work that you do in these you were just mentioning these little steps to help folks get back on their feet. It occurred to me that I think maybe there's this misconception, misunderstanding where folks think when someone is reentering society, things are just laid out for them and they just, you know, pick up where they left off. But, you know, it obviously sounds like that's not the case.
That is not the case. So when you're incarcerated, and I can say this from my own lived experience, you don't make decisions anymore during incarceration. So like your day to day is basically you're told when you eat, you're told where you're going to go, when you're going to go do it, what time you go to bed. And then you're when you're released, you are overwhelmed with all these things that need to happen and you just don't even know where to begin. That's where a place like PACE really, really comes in handy, because it might not even be that the people I work with can't do the things. It's they can't, there's so many things to do. They can't see what needs to be done first and prioritize them. And they haven't had to do these things or have these responsibilities in so long that in some cases in a while, and they're just lost and they just need that person right there to kind of support them and understand. And most importantly, accept them.
Zainab, if you're comfortable sharing with us your story about trying to get an education and what made it such a challenge.
Yes. So I have previous involvement within the criminal justice system. For years, it's been hard just trying to get back on track. A lot of doors have closed on me, from housing to education to jobs. I actually tried to go through MedTech back in around 2014, went through the process, got enrolled, started my class. Like 2 weeks into class, one of the advisors came, pulled me out, explained to me that by me having a pending case, they were no longer able to move forward with me because they wouldn't be able to place me at a job setting once I finished. So my assignment had ended. I was upset. I, you know, just walked away, kept going. A few years later, say around January of 2016, I tried again. And I went through Brightwood College. And I was in the class. I was did my FAFSA and everything. Was going to school for about 2 weeks. I remember I was about 6 months pregnant. And advisor came and got me out of class again. Took me to the office, explained to me the same similar situation that MedTech had explained to me before. They knew about my background at the time, which was really kind of confusing for me, for them to allow me to go through that process and experience it for 3 weeks and then rip me right out of it. And not only that, like, I'm 6 months pregnant. I'm walking home in rain and snow. My hopes and dreams were crushed. And having previous involvement within the criminal justice system, all I wanted was a second chance. And it seemed like everywhere I went, doors just kept closing and closing and closing. So it was really hard for me to maintain the education that I needed, especially just growing up through life. So once I got to experience the Inside Out class, it was amazing for me because it was my first close experience to college. And it was perfect. It was amazing. We done zines and wrote poems, things that I didn't think that I was capable of doing. And it allowed me to process to another level in life. And now I have the confidence to walk on my head up. I have the confidence to keep going. I have the confidence to just advocate for previously incarcerated individuals that went through similar battles that I went through.
Susan, are stories like Zainab's common based on what you've seen and heard from students? And how common are these kinds of challenges?
They are a common. I mean, I've taught Inside Out classes in prisons as well. I've taught at the women's prison, and we used to have a men's facility in Indianapolis called IREF, and that closed. But I taught several classes there at one time. And the thing that's interesting is the campus students kind of come into these classes, I think, feeling a little overconfident that, like, they're going to, you know, just blow it out of the water and these other people are probably not going to be such good students. And they learn something quite different when they get into these classes, because students like Angela and Zainab are among the most motivated, hardworking students I've ever had. I have to say, of all the students in the class, including all the communities, all the campus students, I believe Angela was the only one who every week had a writing assignment in on time. And Zainab was also an outstandingly creative student who I think, you know, really expanded all of our understandings of the different ways that people can learn, the different learning styles that people have, and the different ways that we can express that learning. And I did do a lot in this class with poetry and drawing, which are not things that I'm particularly comfortable with or good at. But the class really rose to the occasion and everybody just gave it a try. And I think that the campus students, I loved what Christina said, because I do want to emphasize that this is an amazingly transformative learning experience for the campus students too. I don't want it to be seen like we're just doing a service for these other people. They do a huge service for us. We learn so much from them, and it really does break down barriers and allow people. We talked about some heavy and difficult issues, and not everybody agreed, but everybody learned to respect one another and to hear a different point of view from views that they might have come into the class with. And I don't think there are that many settings in society right now where we have those opportunities. So I've really valued that about all of my Inside Out classes. I think they've all had that kind of quality.
I was just going to say, is there a way to replicate this on like a worldwide scale so everyone can talk to each other?
I think it would be nice.
Christina, what did you learn from your own personal experiences around this that's helped you assist other people?
It's important that we invite more people into the experience. It's important that we don't discredit or make any kind of assumptions about what someone can or has the potential to create and contribute to not just the classroom, but to our community, to our society. We need to invite more people in to the conversation, and the best way to prepare for that, and what, well, I say the best one way definitely is through higher education. And, studies show that it not only impacts people and their families and their trajectory when it comes to where they're going to be at economically, but it also affects recidivism rates. So I think we need to take a hard look at what we're doing now, what's not working, and ways to improve that, and getting the right people at the table. So I think it's important that we have the right supports in place. That's another big thing that I learned through this experience was, yes, we have able, ready and willing people to participate, but what are we doing? Those of us that are trying to make this happen and make this available, what are we doing to support those people in these endeavors? Are we supporting people to come to the table? And what's our job in this? How do we get them there? People want it, but how do we make it happen? Then that's on us.
Christina, are there any obstacles you face in the work that you do? Is it always a breeze to be able to get a class together?
No, it's not. And again, though, it's not because people don't want to. It's because life is busy. And then the life of someone who's in reentry, as we say, or in that transitional phase, and there's a lot going on. You're having to juggle a lot. So you're adding in school. So you're adding a 3-hour course into your work week. You're adding in homework assignments. And then if there's anything else in addition to that, and then also you're probably working at least one full-time job, maybe two jobs. You have a family, or you're trying to reconnect with your family and reestablish relationships. And you're trying to, as Angel had mentioned, if you've been out, of society as we know it, for a while, you've gotten used to things being done and being told when to do things. So you don't have as many decisions to make. So then all of a sudden you have all of these options. You have all this time in your day and all these things you have to do. And no one really has given you a roadmap for how to make it happen. You just know that if you don't make it happen, there's a price to pay. And that could mean your freedom. So there's a lot of stress that people are under. So we try to get creative, and it helps because, Dr. Hyatt was great at understanding that people have a lot going on, and it's not that they don't yearn to be a part of something. I think it's important that we make it happen for them. And so just being flexible in that.
Well, that was something that I really had to learn in teaching these classes. When I moved the classes out of the prison setting and started teaching in community settings, I was very naive about it. And I really didn't realize, until people educated me, how many responsibilities and obligations people who are still connected to the justice system, but out of prison or jail have to do. Like, it's crazy, you know, and things can happen at the last minute. I mean, I had classes, like, for example, where somebody would say, oh, I can't come to class today because I have to go do a drug test. And they would just get notified at the last minute about this. And the drug testing sites in Indianapolis are not particularly convenient. And we know how unreliable our public transportation system is. So I would be like, oh, okay. I mean, like, taken aback because I didn't realize this happened. Or someone's parole or probation officer called and said they needed to come in that day. And so people have so many demands placed on them. You know, when I started realizing that, it made me feel even more admiring of them, that people were so motivated that they would try to make time for the class as much as they could, that they would do the homework, that they would, you know, they did the reading, they came to class prepared to participate. And that caused the campus students to have to pull their socks up a little bit sometimes too. You know, so I'm just filled with admiration for people like Angela and Zainab and all the challenges that they have faced or are facing and the motivation that they have to keep pushing themselves to go further and further.
We'll be back after a quick break. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam So. We're spending the hour today with a group of guests to talk about access to education for people who are incarcerated and formerly incarcerated and the impact a degree can have on someone trying to reenter society and create stability in their life. With us again, our four guests, Susan Hyatt, a professor in the Department of Anthropology at IUPUI, Christina Byers, a program manager at PACE, Angela Phelps, a peer recovery coach at PACE, and Zainab Cornelius, a case manager and community organizer at Groundwork Indy. Angela, we've mostly been talking about people getting an education after incarceration. What does education look like for people who are still inside? Are there any options for them?
There is, and that comes and goes. Like, there's sometimes what I saw at IWP, Indiana's Women's Prison, that some schools would start to offer some degrees, and then for whatever reason they would not be, they would quit offering it, which would cause issues because let's say somebody that was incarcerated at IWP and started working towards their higher education, and they were released and they only needed a few credits to get their degree. A lot of times those exact same schools that were offering education within the prison would not accept those same individuals outside of prison because of their background.
Zainab, what impact do you think it can have on people to work on their education while they're still incarcerated?
It can impact them a lot. I mean, it helps them to prevent the barriers that are assigned to us as, you know, being released from, you know, being incarcerated, or just, it helps you prepare for life. If I had that access after, you know, while I was going through my trials, it would have created a space for me to move forward. But instead, when I got out, it just seemed like it was hard to tackle everything that I needed. You need education to make three times the income rent. You need the three times the income rent to be able to afford the education. So it's just like, it's just like a circle of things that is just created as far as barriers. So just being able to tackle that while being incarcerated can help a lot. It helps you inside. It's like a self-care, you know, just being able to grow. It gives you strength. It helps you to just, it just gives you hope for the future. You know, and just being able to know that there is a door out there to continue, because education is like the number one barrier in everyone's life, and it's important, and we all need it regardless where you come from, what skin color, what you did, any of that. Like, none of that should matter. Education should always be able to be available no matter what it is that you've done, because we need it to move forward in life.
Go ahead.
Just to piggyback on what Zainab mentioned, and kind of we've referred earlier to the importance on community and how it improves our social network for people after incarceration. But just as it does outside, on the inside, it has an impact on culture and on community. So there's a marked reduction in violence and disciplinary infractions on the inside in facilities when there's higher education offered within the communities of higher education within facilities. There's been studies done. There's a 75% rate of fewer infractions within facilities. So there's a culture change that breaks down racial and ethnic barriers. People understand each other more. And it also improves relationships with staff and the people that are incarcerated. So it does a lot within the facility, and then that translates without or on the outside. But even the culture effect alone, I think, is worthy of mention.
Absolutely. And I was actually going to ask you whether you thought it changes the culture inside prisons when there's education provided.
Absolutely. Yeah. It also restores or provides hope. You often, the longer you're there, the more you stress about what's life going to be like when I get home. And that stress builds, and that can cause a lot of tension. And so the more you're able to open your mind and think of the world around you, and it's not just all about you, that helps too in your everyday life. And it's just practical. The investment in education inside prisons has far more value than just incarcerating people alone. And statistics show that. So,
Angela, when it comes to people who are working towards a degree in prison and then wanting to transition into a school to finish getting it once they're reentering society, is there a good system for that, or is there still barriers in that case?
There's still barriers. There's definitely barriers. It's hard to find higher education institutions that will allow you to, will accept your application with a background. And then the ones that do, I believe, are a little bit more pricey.
Yeah, the private schools actually have more leeway. And so Angela did complete a bachelor's degree at a private college. And so they have more, so they have more flexibility sometimes. But if I could just back up a little bit and go into a little background about the history of prison education. There was a lot of prison education, actually, that took place prior to 1994. And in 1994, the Criminal Justice Act that was passed by the Congress at the time and signed into law by President Clinton took away eligibility for Pell Grants from incarcerated students. So incarcerated students could no longer receive Pell Grants to pay for courses. Therefore, colleges and universities who were offering courses didn't have a way to get tuition. And so those programs gradually came to an end. And Inside Out kind of came in 1997 and filled a little bit of that gap in some places. Under the Obama administration, he began a program called Second Chance Pell, which was kind of a pilot program on reinstating Pell Grants for incarcerated students. And so there were kind of test schools that agreed to participate in that program. That was deemed to be a great success, and it was actually continued under the Trump administration. And now eligibility for Pell Grants has been reinstated for people in prison. You know, it's not a pilot program anymore. In other words, the Pell program is now re-extended again to incarcerated students. So there's a lot of motivation for colleges and universities to actually, you know, begin again offering courses to incarcerated students. But as Angela indicated, we have to make sure if we're going to do that, that we do have a path for people who may complete, you know, let's say they would complete an associate's degree in prison and then come out and want to do a four-year degree or half of a degree and then come out and want to continue. We have to make sure that there's a path for people to be able to do that when they're released. So that's why, you know, I'm concerned about these discouraging questions that are on the Indiana University application. I want to say two other quick things, that there's something called the Common App, which is a college application that many, many schools will accept. I think something like 70% of schools across the country will accept applications submitted by students through the, or prospective students through the Common App. And the Common App itself eliminated all of the questions about criminal involvement. However, they left a kind of a loophole where colleges and universities can add in questions as they choose to. So the common people can use the Common App to apply to IU, but IU has added back in those criminal justice questions. So that was a little disheartening to find. The second thing I just want to say is to give a plug to Ivy Tech, because Ivy Tech does not ask these questions on their applications. Ivy Tech is, a great institution that we have here in Indiana that will accept students regardless of their backgrounds. And I would like to see IU and Ivy Tech work more closely together to make sure that students who go to Ivy Tech who may have criminal backgrounds, that they can then transfer into IU schools without any problems or barriers or hangups.
What I want to ask goes back a little bit to Zainab talking about her experience applying for programs and then being told after being enrolled for a few weeks, oh, you need to leave. You're not going to get a job. Is that the same case with the Inside Out program? Are students taking courses and getting degrees, but unable to use them once they're completed?
Thank you for asking that. Yeah, Inside Out is not a degree granting program. We don't really have the number of faculties, and we can't really offer the range of courses that you would need to have a degree granting program. There are some and Inside Out courses differ quite a bit from state to state. So in Oregon and in Southern California, the Inside Out programs actually began prison degree programs, but they're not exclusively taught by Inside Out trained instructors. They're taught also both programs. The students also take classes in prison through the local community colleges, and some of their credits come from Inside Out classes. But Inside Out is not a degree granting program. We would wish it would be, but we just don't have that kind of range to do that right now. But what Zainab was talking about was another issue that we need to work on too. And that is that what Zainab was really talking about is licensing. And people can get degrees from universities and then discover that there are certain professions in which they cannot be licensed if they have a criminal background. And so that's something that we really need to be aware of when students come to college, to be able to really competently advise them about that, whether we think it's fair or not. If it's that way, we have the responsibility to advise students that, look, I know you'd really love to be a high school guidance counselor and you'd be great at it, but you're not going to be able to get licensed as a high school a guidance counselor with a criminal background. Maybe you can do youth outreach work through your church or something like that. So we have to really be aware of that. And that brings me to another issue that the four of us have talked about, which is how to create programs on campus that could support people with criminal justice involvement when they do come to campus, because it's not just getting people here, it's keeping them here and helping them be successful. And there's a program that I admire very much in California called Project Rebound. It's in all 9, I think, Cal State campuses. And it is a program specifically to provide peer support, counseling, help with housing, you know, kind of like a reentry program, but on campus for students who are fully enrolled. And they have a higher graduation rate among Project Rebound students than the average graduation rate in the Cal State system, and that their recidivism rate is zero. So I think these programs prove their huge benefit to society. I think if people really understood the amount of tax dollars they pay to keep people locked up when people could be taxpaying, working, responsible citizens, if we could help them get there, I think it could really change the conversation.
Well, as we get ready to wrap up here, Christina, what do you think should happen in Indiana or maybe through federal law that would have a significant impact on this whole process?
Well, I think that federally we've seen an acknowledgement that education should be accessible to people regardless of where they reside, regardless of whether they're incarcerated or not. And that opportunity is important for people, and we need to extend that not just within incarceration, but outside. We need to find a way that does that, a responsible way to open those doors. And then also how we support people as they're attending universities and colleges. Inside of, in reentry or not, we need to find a better way to support people and ensure that they finish, and then we'll be the better off for it.
Angela, what do you think is next for this process of education and changing the system? Is there anything that you hope would change?
Yeah, I first and foremost would hope that institutions of higher learning would be more accepting of people who have made a mistake and they're just ready to get on with their life and find value in other areas, and allow them that opportunity. I also think, piggybacking off of what Dr. Hyatt and Christina said, the support that, so when I got my education, it was the big secret. Like, I didn't tell anybody that I had any kind of justice system involvement because I was so ashamed of it. And it made that experience for me, I felt alone. So having that support and having faculty and advisors and people to help guide that experience, and again, allowing people to feel accepted and like they belong. And that should be really society's whole focus on bringing, when people come home, is accepting them back and not pushing them out. Because when you start pushing people out, they really, what options do they have but to reoffend? When you don't welcome them back into employment and back into being with society and with the norm, it doesn't give them any options. And so I hope that higher education institutions come to realize how important it is to start accepting and allowing this population, my population.
Well, I want to thank you all so much for taking the time today and sharing your stories. We really appreciate it. Susan Hyatt is a professor in the Department of Anthropology at IUPUI. Christina Byers is a program manager at PACE. Angela Phelps is a peer recovery coach at PACE. And Zainab Cornelius is a case manager and community organizer at Groundwork Indy. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks so much for listening. This is All In.